Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, May the 12th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabwe's former energy minister, Elton Mangoma, has been arrested by police in Harare on allegations that he flouted some state tender procedures related to prepaid electricity meters.
Police have been talking about a tender at the time when I was minister. That there was someone who claimed they was given verbal instruction to do something that was against the law.
The World Food Programme has warned that the whole Southern African sub-region faces a possible drought.
Yes, there is drought in Zimbabwe. We have been unable to harvest enough to feed our nation. We do need help desperately.
And the government is set to take over the central bank's $1.3 billion debt after the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe debt assumption bill sailed through Parliament today.
Feel that there are members who benefited in tractors, who benefited in combined harvesters, but they've come here to vote for the government to assume their own debt. It's a violation of our parliamentary rules.
Zimbabwe's former energy minister, Elton Mangoma, has been arrested by police in Harare on allegation that he flouted some state tender procedures related to prepaid electricity meters. Detectives of the Law and Order Police Section arrested Mangoma this morning and handed him over to the police fraud squad. The former minister, who is the current treasurer of the MDC renewal team, is accused of having attempted in 2012 to verbally influence the outcome of a national prepaid meter tender while he was still in the government of national unity formed by MDC parties and ZANU-PF in 2008. He is being represented by prominent lawyer Beatrice Mutetwa. There was no immediate comment from the police. Mangoma is expected to appear in court tomorrow after spending the night in police custody. We caught up with him while he was still at the fraud squad section.
Police have been talking about a tender at the time when I was minister, and that essentially that there was someone who claimed they was given verbal instruction to do something that was against the law. So it's the issues of why verbal and why against the law, and what is it that we are talking about. When I asked for more information, they are actually refusing to give us that information.
So what exactly are they accusing you of besides that verbal instruction?
That's essentially all they are accusing me of at this stage. So probably we'll know more tomorrow. But for now, I think they are having pleasure in having me sleeping in the police cell. But it's essentially a way of harassing those who oppose Sanofia. And therefore, for us, we are used to that kind of mentality. When you have no case, you are arrested. You put in the police cell for a few days, sometimes denied bail, and then when the court finds you not guilty, then you go. But you would have been harassed anyway.
How do you feel about this?
You know what ZANU-PF is like. They don't want anyone to challenge them. And particularly when you talk that these people are corrupt, they want everybody to shut up. And we continue to say that they are corrupt. They have destroyed this country, and we need a new government that will be able to change the fortunes of this country.
That was Elton Mangoma, former energy minister and current MDC renewal team treasurer general, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. This is not the first time the former minister has been arrested. He was arrested in 2011 on corruption charges relating to a fuel deal. In 2012, he was arrested again on allegations of undermining the authority of President Robert Mugabe after he was accused of insulting the president.
The World Food Programme, or WFP, has warned that the whole Southern African sub-region faces a possible drought. WFP told reporters that South Africa, which produces 40% of the regional maize crop, will this year harvest an estimated one-third of the usual output. It said countries also facing drought include Angola, Namibia, Botswana, Lesotho, Malawi, Madagascar, and Zimbabwe. It added that Zimbabwe was the worst hit. This comes amid denials by Agriculture Minister Joseph Made that the situation in Zimbabwe does not warrant a declaration of a state of disaster. Former Water Minister Sam Siphepangomo of the MDC renewal team tells Studio 7's Chris Gande the government should snap out of its denial mode and declare the situation a national disaster.
Yes, there is drought in Zimbabwe. We have been unable to harvest enough to feed our nation. And as a result, the people did not harvest anything, particularly in the areas where there was very little rainfall or none at all. But in the areas where there was a bit of rainfall, it is simply the failure of government to support the farmers. First of all, they have not paid them for the maize that they actually brought in the last season into the GMB. And as a result, farmers, some of them, switched from planting maize to actually planting tobacco because it is pointless for them to plant maize and the government will not take whatever they have. As a result of that, I think that coupled with the lack of planning, because the ZANU-PF government suffers from what is called planning deficit. They've let the country down. They should, through cabinet, should declare a national disaster to enable the international community to appreciate that, yes, we've recognized we have a problem and we need help. We do need help desperately.
That was former Water Minister Sam Siphepangomo, who's also a member of the MTC renewal team. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
The Johannesburg High Court has temporarily blocked the deportation of over 200 illegal immigrants arrested on Friday last week in Johannesburg, South Africa, during Operation Fiela or Tanyela, until lawyers for human rights have consulted them. The lawyers went to the court today following the refusal by Home Affairs and the police to comply with a court order granting the lawyers permission to consult the immigrants before they are deported. The majority of the immigrants are Zimbabweans who are staying at the Central Methodist Church in Johannesburg. The arrest follows the recent xenophobic attacks in South Africa, which left at least 7 people dead and thousands displaced.
The government is set to take over the central bank's $1.3 billion debt after the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe debt assumption bill sailed through Parliament today. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
The bill passed after 150 ruling ZANU-PF lawmakers voted in its favor, while 37 Movement for Democratic Change lawmakers opposed it. The RBZ accrued the debt from conducting what are generally known as quasi-fiscal activities, which allegedly benefited mostly ZANU-PF supporters and lawmakers. It was for this reason that opposition MDC lawmakers asked the Speaker of the National Assembly, Jacob Mudenda, that ZANU-PF lawmakers who benefited be excluded from voting. But Mudenda allowed them to vote, leading to the ZANU-PF victory. Kwazana East lawmaker Nelson Chamisa of MDC said this was a travesty of justice.
I feel that there are members who benefited in tractors, who benefited in combined harvesters, but they've come here to vote for the government to assume their own debt. It's a travesty. And like I said, Honorable Speaker said, it's a violation of our parliamentary rules. Of course, with all due respect to your ruling, it's also a violation which has to be noted and stated of our constitution of Zimbabwe. So it has to be noted that in as much as we voted, but our vote is a no, showing our disenchantment and disagreement with the violation that we've so alleged.
But Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa, the sponsor of the bill, said Chamisa and the opposition's concerns were unwarranted.
Mr. Speaker said there is no basis to what the Honorable Mr. Chamisa has said. Yes, of course, he's right to appeal to any other quarters, but it's not the basis of a court of a warrant of a point of order in this house. He can raise those issues elsewhere, but not in this house.
Mutenda said Chamisa and Chinamasa Swaris were valid but declared the matter over. Government takeover of the RBZ debt would push the country's debt to more than $10 billion. Economists say it's unnecessary for the government to take over this debt, as people who benefited from the RBZ quasi-fiscal activities are still around and can be asked to pay what they owe the state. Independent economist James Joa told Studio 7 that people who got tractors, combine harvesters, motor vehicles and other goods would now go scot-free, while taxpayers are expected to settle their debts. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The Zimbabwe National Students Union has rejected the proposed introduction of foreign languages like Chinese in schools, saying the government is misplacing its priorities. In its draft curriculum, the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education is proposing the introduction of compulsory languages like Chinese, French, Swahili, and Portuguese, a new grading system, and a 5-month attachment program for ordinary level students. Zinaso says the ministry is failing to address challenges plaguing education sector and moving to introduce a new curriculum. Gilbert Mutubuki, president of Zinaso, gives reporter Tatenda Gumbo his view.
Instead of inviting those Portuguese or Chinese, I think the government should focus more on maybe science, maths, and those technical subjects which give students the innovative skill. So because what we need here, we need students who are innovative, people who are entrepreneurs, people who can start their own business.
There are some who would say that learning a foreign language would excel a student in helping them grasp an international view.
I think what we need for students to easily grasp the international or global system, I think we need people who are innovative.
And as Zinaso, what would you like to see happen in these secondary and primary schools, as of course many of these students will see themselves one day moving to university or college level?
Okay. I think in the education system, the government needs to pay the lecturers in time, the teachers in time. I think we need infrastructures. We need proper learning buildings, not because right now students are learning under a tree, you know, with one teacher maybe teaching almost close to 200 students. We need also to focus on technical subjects.
That was Gilbert Mutubuki, president of Zimbabwe National Students Union, on the line in Harare. And Takawafira Joe of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, which also participated in the curriculum review based on recommendations of the 1999 Presidential Commission of Inquiry on Education, says they are worried about the draft curriculum.
We would have loved a situation where the draft curriculum was released and we would take it to our members so that they interrogate it. And lastly, we would have an all-stakeholders conference where industry, educationists, politicians, churches would be there, and we rigorously analyze the draft curriculum to see whether it resonates with what we want as Zimbabweans, so that it could take us forward.
So now, can we say that you were part of the system where you made a decision to actually introduce Chinese, French, Swahili, and Portuguese? Can that be implemented?
I must admit that the introduction of all the, I think it's a political decision.
There's also a proposal to introduce some kind of skill orientation program. So it involves maybe some people being conscripted into the army. Do you agree with that?
No. Our members who attended the draft conference with the minister officials, they were very clear in their meeting with the minister officials that industrial attachment must be part and parcel of the student's examination process rather than coming at the end of completion of Form 4.
That was Takawafira Joe of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare. Primary and Education Minister Lazarus Dokora was not available for comment as he was not responding to calls on his mobile phone.
Meanwhile, a Zimbabwean whose leg was amputated after he was bitten by a venomous snake in his rural Guruve home in Mashonaland Central and then written off by some relatives has passed medical studies with flying colors at a USA college. Godwill Zhou, who was doing his studies at Nazarene College under the Education U.S. Student Achievers Program, or USAP, told almost 3,000 guests and graduates in a ceremonial charge that people should never give up even under the most difficult situations. For his dearling performance, Zhou has been granted a 5-year fully funded PhD scholarship in regenerative medicine in USA. He received every award that the chemistry department hands out. He had this to say at the graduation ceremony on Sunday.
My aunt, who is the sort of the head of the family, declared that there was no reason to send me to school because as a person with a disability, I have become useless. Something parallel is happening today in America. Young people are being told that we cannot look better than our parents did, that we will wind up living at home for years, that we will not find good jobs or build better tomorrows for ourselves or heal the ills that plague our planet. When my aunt told me I had no future, something snapped in my brain. Rather than accept what she had said, and I want to make sure that you guys understand that in my culture, children are taught to accept the wisdom of their elders without question. So when my aunt declared that I had become useless, I said to myself, no, I am not useless. I will succeed. And by working as hard as I could, by keeping my eye on my goals, and by giving myself no excuses, I did. I surmounted a disability, a family of subsistence farmers with no understanding of the importance of education, extreme poverty, and a country with the world's highest rate of inflation of about 660 million%. And here I am today on this stage.
That was Zimbabwean Godwill Zhou speaking at a graduation event at Nazarene College, USA. Zhou, who was the president of Liana Band at King George VI School for the Disabled, is the 19th of 22 children of parents who are subsistence farmers.
Coming up, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu takes a closer look at workers' strikes gripping Zimbabwe.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A strong earthquake struck Nepal early Tuesday afternoon, killing at least 41 people in a country still dealing with a devastating quake that hit less than 3 weeks ago. Nepal's home ministry has also reported more than 1,100 people injured.
U.S. Secretary of State John met Russian President Putin Tuesday in the resort city of Sochi in Kerry's first visit to Russia since relations soured over sharp disagreements on Ukraine and Syria. Before sitting down with Putin, Kerry met Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov for more than 4 hours in what was the highest-level U.S. visit to Russia since the Ukraine crisis began in early 2014.
And a major new survey of religious life in the United States shows that the Christian share of the country's population is declining while the number of adults who do not identify with any organized religion is growing.
The wheels are slowly coming off in Zimbabwe as all economic indicators are headed south. Most companies in both the private and public sectors have been hit by crippling strikes. Industrial action is now the order of the day at diamond mining firms Engen and Mbata, National Railways of Zimbabwe, Zisco Steel, and local councils such as Mutare, Marondera, Gwanda, Gweru, and Harare. The construction industry has been forced to downsize operations, while the hotel and catering industry and banking sector had their membership base eroded by retrenchments and increased casualization of labor due to an unfavorable macroeconomic environment. The textile industry succumbed to the retrogressive impact of the influx of Chinese goods on the market.
The liquidation of companies and retrenchments is now a daily occurrence. Workers are falling into the predicament of continued and sustained erosion of their standard of living. A collective bargaining has become so strained, resulting in an increase in deadlock cases which have to be resolved through arbitration. To talk about arbitration and the rights of workers, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu turned to prominent labor lawyer Rogers Matsikidze, who admits the labor situation is deteriorating.
Yeah, the workers have got a remedy in terms of the Labor Act. They are supposed to file complaints through the Ministry of Labor or the relevant employment council. They would file what we call a dispute of unfair labor practice. And specifically, non-payment of salaries is an unfair labor practice which falls under Section 6, Subsection 1 and 2. It's both a criminal and civil law issue, but mostly employees go for the civil because of the relationship between the employer and the employee.
We have seen that some workers have embarked on industrial action. Is this advisable?
No, it's not advisable because the challenge is that salaries, non-payment of salary, is a dispute of right. It's not a dispute of interest. You can only embark on strike on dispute of interest, not a dispute of right. But however, in this case, it is my view that if courts really were to look at it more closely, you'd find that you can't really expect an employee who doesn't have a salary to come to work. It's contrary to public policy. You are like you are baking your own cake and eating it. But unfortunately, we've seen employers firing based on that perspective. So it's advisable rather for the employees to proceed with their matter, to execute property and attach property and sell this.
What happens when a company fails to pay its workers?
A worker can take that matter to the Minister of Labor. The matter goes through the normal processes of conciliation, arbitration, labor court. Then you get your award. You can register it with the High Court, execute the property, garnish the account. If those assets are there, but sometimes we've seen that some companies do not have those assets.
So when a company is liquidated, what's in for the worker there?
This is where our challenge is. Our workers here, they are actually suffering both ways, in the sense that when a company liquidates, the law does not make them what we call preferential or secured debtors. They are the least ones to be paid, so they get a zero. So we have seen that they want to go to the pensions, there is nothing for them. The pensions are telling them between 2000 and now, your money actually is in dollarized. It was banned by inflation. So literally, we've got nothing. That is the reason why you are seeing in all urban centers, there are people who are educated, MBAs, busy senior people selling wares like your reticulars. They are selling sunglasses, vegetables, and everything, because they've literally been reduced to vendors because of these issues.
Would you say Zimbabwe's labor laws are adequate or can actually protect the worker, or we are slowly going back to the draconian Master and Servant Act of 1991?
Yeah, we are having a very simple challenge, because now we have come to accept in Zimbabwe to say that a black employer is not accountable to anybody. Because the challenge which we have is lack of accountability. One is given a company today to run. The next morning, that company is empty. Where is the money? Where is it gone? Nobody even bothers. So we are having a problem. Those who are some of the people who are trying to say labor laws in Zimbabwe are actually not good for business. But the challenge which we are having is that the labor laws also in Zimbabwe, they are not good for employees on the sense that they don't protect the enterprise, the owners, from vouchering into the enterprise. In other words, taking assets outside.
That was labor lawyer Rogers Matsikidze speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Despite its wealth of natural resources that can support job creation and increased exports, Zimbabwe faces huge economic and social barriers. Unemployment is hovering above 80%, though the government insists that it is almost 11%. The country's businesses lack access to finance, and inadequate infrastructure prevents effective movement of goods, and unemployment is rife. Companies operating below 30% are going for years without paying workers. The government blames this on sanctions.
Two U.S. diplomats are visiting Zimbabwe this week, a rare occurrence in recent years because of frosty U.S.-Zimbabwe relations. Sebastian Mofu looks at the purpose of their visit as Zimbabwe pushes for an end to travel and financial sanctions against its leaders.
A U.S. statement says Shannon Smith, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, and Stephen Feldstein, the Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labor, will meet with government officials, business leaders, and civil society organizations during their four-day visit to Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe's Permanent Secretary for Foreign Affairs, Joey Bima, said Harare wants to re-engage with Washington. The U.S., along with many other Western countries, imposed sanctions on Zimbabwe's leadership in 2002 following reports of election rigging and human rights abuses. Independent analyst Pedzisai Ruhanya says the visitors will analyze Zimbabwe's political climate and the ruling ZANU-PF party.
To assess whether the political environment is stable enough for the U.S. government to review its policies. The European Union lifted the sanctions, apart from those that relate to the First Lady and the President. And I think that they will be largely disappointed because of the missing of human rights activists like Itai Dzamara. So what ZANU-PF is doing will not advance its cause to do business with America.
Activist Itai Dzamara went missing on March 9. Zimbabwean police say Dzamara's wife last saw her husband when five men forced him into a car before driving off. The opposition and civic organizations have accused President Robert Mugabe's government of being behind the abduction. The activist had been staging protests to force Zimbabwe's 91-year-old leader to step down for failing to prop up the country's economy. Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa told Parliament that Harare had no issue with the missing activist and will arrest whoever kidnapped him.
Everything must be done to apprehend and bring to book whoever is responsible.
More than 2 months down the line, the activist has yet to be found. Earlier this week, the EU urged Zimbabwean authorities to provide regular and thorough progress reports on their search for Dzamara as ordered by the High Court in March. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts in the Youth Connection will be talking with experts and listeners about proposals to introduce several foreign languages at schools in Zimbabwe and related issues.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Zimbabwe's former energy minister, Elton Mangoma, has been arrested by police in Harare on allegations that he flouted some state tender procedures related to prepaid electricity meters.
The World Food Programme has warned that the whole southern African sub-region faces a possible drought.
The government is set to take over the central bank's $1.3 billion debt after the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe debt assumption bill sailed through Parliament today.
That's our broadcast this evening. Join me shortly for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga in Washington.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.